from the intersection of technology and public accounting.
It's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Welcome to Tech2Go. This edition is brought to you by the CPA Technology Advisor. Visit cpatechadvisor.com for all the latest independent reviews, educational webcast programs, and a free productivity survey for your firm. Your host for Tech2Go is Greg LaFollette. He is the executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and he also serves as the senior manager of tax and technology consulting for I. Bailey. He is an accomplished professional who holds the CPA and CITP credentials and is uniquely qualified to help firms navigate through the technology maze to find practical solutions that work. And now here's Greg to introduce you to the rest of the team on Tech2Go.
Hi, Greg LaFollette, episode 5, Tech2Go for June 2007. Today, my panelists and guests have a nice discussion about the Sage Insights Conference held just last week in Orlando, Florida. Randy Johnston has some really interesting revelations and observations from that show. We spend a considerable amount of time visiting about the Innovation Awards, and all of the Tech2Go panelists were obviously judges in Innovation Awards, so they had some interesting ideas. We're not quite ready to reveal the winners of that yet, but they'll be rolled out in early June at the California Tech Show in Los Angeles. We wrap up in the end of our podcast this month with a discussion of workflow for the practicing public accounting firms, how it fits in with scheduling and task management and due date monitoring and practice management, document management, and tax, and all sorts of things like that. I think you'll find it very helpful and very, very useful. We answer a couple of readers' questions about 16x9 monitors and how that aspect changes working, and we talk again about the Microsoft MPAN and Action Pack. So stay with us. We've got a good solid hour with you this particular episode, episode 5, June 2007, Tech2Go. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Greg LaFollette, Intersection Live, Tech2Go, episode 5. Actually, for June 2007, it occurred to me, guys, that when we'd been doing these, we did the first one the end of January and called it January, but it didn't really come out until February. So in order to correct this, I'm going to start referring to this one as June 2007, episode 5. How's that sound, guys?
Sounds great.
Great. Our regular full-time panel is here. Randy Johnston, hello.
Good day.
Nice to have you. Brent Goodfellow.
Good to be here.
And last but not least, our friend from the East Coast today, Dave McClure.
Hello again from the Blue Mountains of Virginia.
Right. Well, welcome to all of you, and thanks again for sharing your time. Let me point out a couple of things that I think are good news. We have some fairly solid success for our podcast. We've had north of 1,600 direct downloads from our website. That does not include the people who pull as a subscription through iTunes, because unfortunately, with the way the technology exists right now, to count those guys is incredibly expensive. So for right now, we don't know how many there are, but let's just assume there's some. So we're getting some good people. Are you guys getting any feedback?
Yeah, I've actually had several people say that they've listened to our casts and ask us to keep up the good work.
I've had some similar feedback.
Good. Well, that's kind of fun. Randy, you and I sat together and listened to a couple of presentations last week down in Orlando at Sage Insights. An awful lot of people out there, and Sage has got this huge group of rabid people that get together and kind of live around it. They refer to it as the Sage ecosystem, all of these people that have products and stuff. You must have had north of 3,000 people down there, don't you think?
It was pretty amazing. I actually did some counts, and I figured that they were in that ballpark too, Greg. And when you think about the dedication of these people to their products and the channel, pretty interesting. You and I obviously haven't chatted about this other than while we were on site in Orlando at the Gaylord, but I was pretty pleased to see the maturing of the Sage management. Probably the biggest news there might have been the restructuring and reorganization of the Sage software business divisions, which really aligned Peachtree and MES-90 and a lot of those products, plus their specialized products wound up getting a little better alignment. So I know I spent a fair bit of time with these new upper-level managers, whether it was Himanshu Palsuli or his team. It was pretty interesting to listen to what they were thinking.
Good people. I was particularly pleased to see the way that they had reorganized the Peachtree and the Sage Software Accountants Network and Mass 90, that group under Connie Sertusi, who is just a dynamite gal, and she's going to do a really, really good job. And it's she pulls that team together, all kind of dedicated to serving small and medium-sized accounting firms. It's almost like Sage decided we're going to come back and pay attention to small accounting firms again. And I was really, really heartened. I got to spend some time visiting with Connie specifically on that point, and walked away from that Sage meeting feeling better than I had leaving any other Sage meeting for over the last 4 or 5 years, I think.
I think that would be an accurate summation, too. And it was also quite healthy that they said, look, we think Peachtree, and they didn't say it quite like this, but how I would interpret it, look, we think we've got at least as good a product as QuickBooks for the entry-level market, but we're losing to these guys, and we're tired of losing.
Right.
We're going to go out and do something about it. So that's maybe not exactly the way they'd say it, but in effect, I think they're going to be a whole lot more serious than they have been, not to mention making the new small business MES-90 available at such attractive pricing. So they've got a multi-front war that they're taking on there, and pretty serious about CRM, obviously another major thrust for the company. And, you know, I think as they continue to go further north of $1 billion in sales, they continue to be a force to reckon with in the U.S. accounting software market.
Well, and they were up. Their metrics were pretty darn impressive. They were up 26-27% last year. There aren't a lot of businesses around that grow at that kind of rate. Some by acquisition, obviously, but a good solid portion of that organically too.
That's correct. And then I thought it was also fascinating that they'd put direct focus on developing toolkits, if you will. In other words, the technical development of their products, putting a lot more focus on that based on what they'd learned from the Peachtree customer-centered design initiatives. And I, of course, I'd written about that for our publication last May based on what I thought were pretty extraordinary results and a great process for working on software. So that's back in, what, the May 2006 issue, I think.
Exactly. And, Randy, I didn't get a chance to tell you how much I enjoyed your handling of, for our listeners, Randy hosted and moderated a discussion on CRM. And if you had one exec up there for each of Sage's different CRM products, you end up with a crowded dais, because there's a lot of them. But I mean, with all the different things they got going, and you got these guys to start answering some questions, you know, to the audience, and maybe even sometimes I felt like they were answering questions to each other.
Yes, in fact, they were. It felt like, you know, I had actually interviewed the guys before the conference. But I basically said, look, I don't want to just get up there and do canned stuff. I want to understand where you think things are going, and then I'm going to ask questions about some of those types of things. So, you know, better be prepared because that's the way I'm going to do it. And for a rare event for me, I very rarely use scripted or prepared notes, but I'd actually typed out my questions because I knew what I wanted to try to get out of them. And I thought they did a nice job of handling those things. So I appreciate, you know, your observation of how that session had gone.
Well, I particularly appreciated your persistence with some of those questions because you'd ask a question and then they'd answer another question. And a couple of times you said things like, well, that's really very interesting, but let's go back to my question. You said you were much more diplomatic than that, but there was a whole room full of people that were pretty interested in what you did. So you did the profession, I think, a favor there.
Well, and it turns out I think the sincerity of the Sage management team, I think, came through from my listening to them, and it's like, wow, you guys are dead serious about this, and I think that's good for businesses of, you know, the small medium variety that they serve and the associates in the Sage Accountants Network.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, I more more competition in that market. You know, have somebody in there good and solid, and as you said, you know, Peachtree's a solid product. They don't get their due in the sometimes in the fight between for attention between Microsoft and QuickBooks. Last note in there, I went down and walked the show floor, and they must have had, I think they told me they had 160 booths in there.
That would be a conservative estimate, because I actually did a little booth counting, and then I lost count.
Uh-huh.
And they were good people, a lot of interesting vendors represented there, some of which you know.
Very few of them. You know, maybe other than, I'm going to say less than maybe a dozen of them are vendors that you would see at other trade shows, other conferences, at other state society meetings and things. These are people who live pretty much in that, what they, you know, again, that Sage ecosystem.
Yeah, that would be true. You know, an exception to that, for example, might be the Act First document management folks.
Right. And, you know, Cabinet NG was there. And you know, so some of those, you know, like the document management people, you know. But other than those, not a lot of people.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, we've talked a little business analytics in the past, but the QuickClick folks had a gorgeous business analytics product that was all memory-based. And it was like, wow, this is really impressive stuff. And, you know, my evolving knowledge became, oh, this is what's being used for the business analytics and sales logics. And, oh, by the way, this runs with pretty much every product in the U.S. marketplace. And, oh, this is so simple that end users are intended to set it up. And, oh, this is really inexpensive. It was like one of those aha moments. How did
right.
I miss it?
Yeah, those high-priced business analytics cubes aren't reserved just for the Fortune 500 anymore.
Not at all, but it turns out in this case, I think the per-seat pricing for that analytics products was like $300.
Right.
And I'm looking at it saying, I think this could work in a lot of places. So
exactly.
My takeaways from the show is to learn more about that particular vendor and their product offerings.
Well, I think that's a great segue into our next topic. I want to talk a little bit about the Innovation Awards. This is our fourth annual Innovation Awards coming up, and we will post this podcast. We're recording this on Monday the 21st, and we will post this on June 1st. I'm sorry, on June 1st. We'll post this on June 1st because this is episode 5. The June edition goes up on June 1st, which is just a couple of days before we announce the winners of the fourth annual CPA Technology Advisor Innovation in Tax and Accounting Awards, and we'll do that to the profession or to the vendor community at the California show, the California CPA Society show at the LAX Hilton on Monday the 4th of June. And then the following week on Tuesday the 12th of June in Las Vegas at AICPA Tech at the general luncheon session, we will again present those awards to the profession and ask each of the award winners to, you know, to have a couple of minutes to tell the profession basically about their awards. So I can't tell you at this point who the winners are. We don't want to reveal that, but we've all pored over a ballot of that included 41 nominees, and this is a lot of work. And I want to thank all of you for the work that you go through in doing this voting. We sent out to you know, all three of you, along with you, another 35 or 40 people that this goes out to, and so a lot of people across the country look at these. It's a big PDF with lots of information on each one of these 41 products, and so I'd like to kind of go around the horn here a little bit and ask everybody to comment a little bit. You saw these 41 products, Dave. What did you see that impressed you? Which products were ones that you thought were particularly innovative this year?
Yeah, it's interesting you use the word innovative, because in looking these over and in voting for them, I keyed on right away to how really innovative is the product, or how innovative is it in the accounting space? How new is it? Because as you and I discussed, you know, sometimes you're seeing version 10 or version 12 of a product that is submitted, and you have to look at it pretty closely to say, well, is this just somebody trying to garner another award, or is there something truly innovative involved? And in fact, there were quite a few. The category that sticks out in my mind in that regard is the document management stuff that mm-hmm. just gets better every year. And some really good innovations. It's not just a matter of converting to PDF files anymore. It's true hypertexting, true indexing, true document management. And the other one that, of course, leapt to my mind is my favorite category. We had a mobile cell phone and email device that was put up for the first time this year, and I'd love to see that category grow.
Right, right. Good stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting is we don't define innovation, and we don't define it for a reason, because I don't want to taint other people's definition by what I think it is. But I've heard people say, as we talk about this, well, that's something that's going to really change how an accountant, a practicing public accountant, deals with and interacts with his clients or his staff. It's going to fundamentally change their daily life or their business practice and stuff. And so it's not always a new piece of technology, or, you know, it's, wow, here's somebody that's using Ajax or RSS or something. Sometimes it's just repackaging or pricing or things like that, you know, which I find kind of interesting.
Well, we did some of that, actually. We saw some examples of products in which, you know, part of the innovation is they brought the price down to a level where even smaller firms could participate. It's kind of, you know, Greg, I call it the holy cow factor. If I look at this and I sit back and I go, holy cow, then, yeah, pretty good chance it's innovating something.
Right, right. Brent, what did you see in there that you liked?
Well, I was kind of with Dave, I guess, in my definition of innovation, and I understand why you don't define it, because obviously you can re-engineer a really old technology and all of a sudden it's new again. But for me, you know, document management has been around a long time, and, you know, if you don't see anything new in document management, then you're looking for someone to kick it up a level. And for me, you know, the promise of being able to OCR documents that are scanned, pull that information, and then stick it in input sheets in tax preparation software, to me, that's innovation. And I think at least in my opinion, it appears that the leader in that right now is the SurePrep product.
The 1040 scan product, and certainly one I know that caught the eye of a lot of voters, myself included. I mean, I looked at it, and you know, after I read it, I actually went to the website and looked at it some more. It's pretty interesting stuff. Tell me how that works, Brett. Let's make sure that everybody knows what's going on with that.
Well, essentially what they're doing is they're taking source documents which are scanned, and they're OCRing the information.
So they first use like a forms recognition, so they know what it is. So it kind of does what that CCH product from last year.
CCH scan.
CCH scan. The old BACDIP product first recognizes what it is and gets it together, but that's just the first part, right?
That's just the first part, and then they they use a sophisticated dictionary to, based on the recognition of a form, to pull some data off that form and then transfer it into tax preparation packages, which is, you know, again, that the promise of that is tremendous. I have yet to satisfy myself that it works well. But I understand from firms that have been using this particular product that it works pretty well.
Well, I mean, even if it's not perfect, it's certainly I've never seen a junior accountant that was perfect either, and that's really what that is, isn't it? It's a junior accountant in a box.
That's right.
Take this stuff, organize it, take what you know. And put it in the tax program, and tell me the other stuff that you don't know, so I can deal with that.
That's right. That's right. And the other thing that about the SurePrep product, the thing that I initially was a little hesitant about was the fact that it's all outsourced. You know, you lose control of your data essentially, and it's the same old story when you consider an outsourced vendor. Then you have to satisfy yourself that the vendor itself has proper controls in place to protect your data.
Right, right. And understand, I mean, with this SurePrep product, Lacerte built a product this year called Lacerte Source Doc Auto. Randy, you know about that. Tell me about that a little bit.
I do, and in fact, before we leave the SurePrep one behind, one of the key things to be aware of on the SurePrep product is there's a pretty good initiative to make that available in-house in the coming season as well. So even though it's been hosted this past year, probability of doing it in-house with that product next year is on the burner.
That's good news for me.
Yeah, for there are some people who just don't want the outsourced piece, but this year I think they were primarily doing it because they wanted to have control over the performance and monitor it and build their libraries and do a lot of things like that. And, the SourceDoc auto entry piece from Intuit with the Lacerte product, I think that was a fine first attempt on that product. You know, on a lot of these 1040 work paper organization tools, they're in generation 1 or 2, and this coming season they'll be headed to generation 3. But the, I'll call it the drag and drop interface of doing the data entry from the SourceDoc auto entry, very nice first step on that product. And I think it also has a promise of being able to be used in more environments. So, you know, I'd say kudos to Lacerte on that particular effort for the year.
Yep. One of the ones that I noticed particularly, and we've seen this around a little bit over the last since this Check 21 thing came out, is the direct deposit of checks from your desktop. And lots of people do that. You kind of look at it and go, okay, well, that's fine, that's cool. But one of the companies out there came up with a product that's nominated here, a company called BankServe, and their product is called Deposit Now AR. And when I looked at that, my first thought was, well, so what? You get a check and you scan it, and it automatically pulls it from, you know, from the payer's checking account and puts it into mine. That's nice. But then I looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, what they're doing is associating that payer with one of your customers in QuickBooks and looking up and posting that payment directly into QuickBooks. Then I got impressed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a, you know, that was to me was a very impressive thing for the, you know, for a group, you know, the right kind of company that happens to handle a lot of checks. The check comes in the door and bam, they scan it. It's in their account, you know, in 2 seconds, but the payment's automatically credited inside QuickBooks.
That's assuming they're using QuickBooks, so that's a limitation there.
That's a limitation, and I guess, you know, when you look at a product and go, well, it's got, you know, 85 or 90% penetration in the small business market, rightfully or wrongfully, that's fact. It's a, you know, that's a pretty strong thing.
Yep.
So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and you know, they also extended over into Peachtree, and I always watch products like this that they have more than one product that they can do that in, because that tells me they've got the tools to be able to take it to other environments that they believe have enough market share to justify the development work. And so, you know, that was actually a very strong little point. It's just that little or Peachtree.
Right. Well, you know, when I first looked at that product with the fellows at BankServe, there's a whole bunch of these are all ex-bankers, and they built this thing and they got all the banking part of it, and they showed me the product and said, oh yeah, it does this, it does, and it's got these non-repudiation, it's got this, it's got all this bank stuff, and I looked at it and said, you guys don't get what you've got here. Nobody cares about the banking part. I mean, that's nice. But the amazing part is the accounting part, the bookkeeping part, getting rid of all of that, you know, accounts receivable recording stuff. And so that's when they started going, oh, is that important? We said, yeah, in the accounting world, that's about the most important thing there is. Forget about the banking part.
And, Greg, one other point that I'd make is for small businesses themselves, having run a number of small businesses, you have no idea how dreadfully inconvenient it is to have to make that daily bank run to deposit checks. You're talking about, for somebody in the office, you're paying an hour a day in unproductive time.
Right.
So just that gain in productivity is an impressive piece.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I didn't mean to poo-poo that, but frankly, there's lots of people doing that. You know, so what I saw as the big innovation was the tie. Who saw something else? Any other big ones there? I got a couple of more that I liked, but I want to hear you guys.
Well, I've got I'm always interested in the practice management time and billing type.
Well, isn't it about time that we saw some innovation here?
Exactly.
You know, it's only about it could have happened any time in the last 10 or 15 years, but it did happen this year.
That's one thing that doesn't change every year for sure, at least the principles. And you guys didn't say anything about time slips. I don't know if that actually came up at Sage Insights. But I noticed that BillQuick is a web-based practice management. And, of course, Thompson has their Practice CS product out there, which is finally on an SQL database. So I'm not sure about the web-based product, but I'm really looking forward to working with the SQL, the Practice CS product.
Yeah, in fact, you know, the changes that Thompson had rolled into this product this time around, that was a nice addition, and I don't actually see other big innovations coming from CCH this year with the focus over on the .NET project. I think there'll be some minor changes that they do, so when you start looking at the broad market, that may be the practice management innovation of this year.
Well, you know, I think there's only so many ways you can chop up practice management, and Thompson has built this thing, and it appears to be, you know, a pretty solid product. There's a bunch of people using it, and I think most of them successfully. There's obviously you'll hear some moaning and groaning from some early adopters, and you're always going to hear that. But you know, chopping this thing up with the firm view and the client view and the staff view and some things like that, it's pretty interesting when you look at the CCH slideware of what they're going to build, and then you go look at what Thompson is already selling, to me it looks like the same product.
Right.
You know, always kind of interesting. I like the NASBA product that's out here, and I'm not quite sure why more accounting firms aren't jumping on this thing. You know, NASBA has launched this CPE tracker thing that's web based and allows an individual who's licensed in one or more states, who's a CPA licensed in one or more states, and they intend to take this and move it into other areas so they can handle EAs and maybe, you know, CITPs and things like that eventually. Right now it's CPAs. And it automatically keeps track of you. You enter your CPE, gives you a chance. If you have a certificate, you scan it and attach it. You enter your CPE. It keeps track of all of the stuff, and then rolls it up. And when it's time to file, what their vision is, and they've got the deal done with most of the states now, you can actually file electronically. You push a button and go, and there it is. And why wouldn't you? Because you've got all that data. You can also say, hey, I now work for such and such an accounting firm, and then your data is available to that firm so that internally the CPE coordinator can roll up and see who needs what. I mean, I think that's just an amazing allocation and adaptation of, it's certainly Web 2.0.
Yeah, definitely Web 2.0, and I'd like to see it go a step further, and that is to integrate with, the major time and billing packages, because a lot of those support some sort of CPE tracking, and if you could somehow export that into the NASBA system for electronically filing on renewals, that'd be pretty awesome.
Right.
So, Greg, I have to say a little bit, maybe I'm the dissenting voice here.
Okay.
I'd like to see this product develop a lot more as well. As it stands now, it's an interesting application. It's a web-based database. It does provide some convenience, but it seems to me there is so much more that could be done with this. And I guess I'm hesitant to say this is a really great innovation until I see version 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, they're launching within the next couple of weeks.
Oh darn! We didn't get to look at
didn't get to look. It's bad timing on their part, but it is a pretty. It's certainly not there yet. But just like a lot of these things that aren't there yet, you know, they're directionally, I think they're on the right track.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
So before we leave this, anybody got any that they really like?
Well, you know, there's actually, if you look back through the list, kind of like the other guys have mentioned, you do wonder what is new in innovation and what might be a repeat. But there are several of the products that I think have a lot of interesting innovations in them in 2007. For example, the Act First Paperless, what's going on with those guys? There's some very interesting stuff that's happened there.
Oh, they built that wizard that allows them to hook to just about anything, doesn't it?
Just about anything. So it's kind of I would call it a Tier 2 class paperless integration for a product that, you know, participates at a much lower place in the marketplace. So there's a lot of very interesting stuff there. Some of the new roll-ups in the Microsoft Forecaster in the 6.7 code, very gorgeous type of stuff. That's been 2 years coming, and that is very significant progress in the, let's just call it budgeting forecast modeling area, because it's gotten a lot more useful as far as that side of it goes. I'm still a big fan of what SourceLink has done. Again, you'll notice several of these are along in the paperless area, though, too, that I like.
Right.
You know, what SourceLink has done from a paperless perspective for QuickBooks, I think that's just a very nifty type of approach.
Right.
So, you know, as I was looking down through here, there's actually quite a few things that were probably good in a prior version, but they're new versions. It's almost like if you haven't looked in 2007, you need to step back and look. So when the final list goes to press, whether they were the innovation winner or not, most of these at least deserve a look-see in
right.
terms of what they're doing today.
Well, I will tell you that we have in a couple of other years, and we will again this year, have honorable mentions because there were there was obvious definition at the top, but then there was a good solid cluster of products that while they weren't right at the top across our 36 judges, I think, when we got votes all in, there was a group of them that weren't right at the top but were very close to the top that attracted good solid attention. In other words, maybe they didn't get tens from everybody, but they got sevens and eights and nines across the board. And I think that's what you're talking about, Randy.
That is the type of thing. So it's like, well, these are interesting, and it's not unlike our innovation comment. Is it truly innovative, or, you know, is it just evolutionary as opposed to revolutionary?
Yep.
So, and the evolutions that are going on here are pretty darn solid across this mix.
Right. Well, there's one more. You know, as we talked about the web 2.0 thing. I think there's one in there that is truly was really amazing. Now, I don't think that it's going to change life for small and medium sized accounting firms much, but CCH did what I would call a classic mashup. They took basically zip coding and said they've got a product they call the Tax Zone Locator, where you simply say to their system, my client is at zip code 68207. What special programs are there for taxation, whether it's federal, state, county, whether there's a TIF, whether there's an Indian reservation, whether there's some sort of a special energy type credit, any tax program that happens to exist for that particular address. That impressed me. I thought that was pretty cool.
It is very cool. I've run that myself, Greg, and it was pretty interesting in terms of just looking up, you know, clients. And normally when I try to show that to people, I literally say, you know, give me the zip code of one of your better clients. And would you like to go to this client bringing them some tax advantage because of your knowledge?
Right. Right. The downside, I see, and I guess it's not a downside, it's just one of application. I mean, I spend my life trying to deal with small accounting firms. And when I talk to a small accounting firm who's in, oh, let's pick out something crazy, let's say Hutchins in Kansas, there's a firm there of six or eight people, those guys pretty well know all of the special tax breaks, or and I say all, that's a wide brush, but most of the special tax breaks that affect their clients, because their clients are all in the same town they are.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a pretty,
you know,
fair.
It's very different, and I'm sitting in a firm of 1,000 professionals and 100 partners and with clients all over. So that's a very different thing for a large firm.
Yeah, it becomes a lot more interesting where there's bigger metroplexes with a lot of different tax regulations and stipulations. I typically like to run the thing in the Californias and the Colorados and some of those that,
sure,
that have some more unusual things. You know, in our small firms here in Hutchinson, just as the direct example, the disadvantage that these guys wind up with is when they actually do deal with clients across different geographies through Kansas, because they specialize in something like schools or governmental or construction and so forth, because they can't get enough business in one specialty in a single town. So one of my favorite examples here locally is somebody who specializes in wheat elevators, grain elevators.
Right.
neighbor.
Well, let's pop on to topic three. One of the things that I wanted to visit about, and we've actually kind of touched on this a little bit earlier in a couple of places. There are some pretty interesting products getting built out there around the area of what I'm going to call workflow. So you've got these products. There's the XCM product, the Expatax XCM product. We talked a little bit about SurePrep. They've got a workflow product. We talked about ActFirst. There's workflow built into lots of DMS. We talked about tax products. There's workflow built into tax products. We talked about DMS. There's workflow built into that. So we got workflow all over the place. We talked about practice management. We got scheduling, task management, due date monitoring, workflow, all of these different places. And it's real important to keep track of it one place, but it's equally bad to try and keep track of it four or five or six or seven places. Where are we as a profession with this stuff? Who seems to be doing it well? Who's going to win? What's a practitioner to do? Brent, you're in a practice. What do you like about the way you're doing it? More importantly, what don't you like about it?
Well, I think what I don't like about it, and I'll just get that out of the way first, is as you discussed, we've got all these disparate systems, and there's really no integrated workflow. So practitioners in public practice are left to kind of develop their own workflow. We use the workflow that's part of our document management system, and it's not where I'd like it to be, but it's a heck of a good start. Such that, you know, if I am the preparer of a tax return and I check the source documents, the scanned source documents into our document repository, I can specify where that goes. You know, in a workflow, it goes to a reviewer, and then when the reviewer is through doing their work, then the next step in the workflow may be to send a notification to the assembly folks so that they can put the return together.
But you're not using that, right?
No, we are using it.
Okay, but there's also workflow over in your practice management.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And that's why I say you've got disparate systems, and so you're left to choose the workflow, the built-in workflow that is going to be functionally the easiest to use and understand by the staff in the firm. And you can't get the two to talk to each other, so you have to choose one or the other.
So if you're using a tax package, you know, for example, you know, Lacert, UltraTax, ProFX, whatever, you know, they all have workflow built into the tax package, so that, you know, there's a system, and it's really a task management kind of a system. So you can see, I guess it's a status reporting function more than workflow. But for many firms, that is workflow.
Well, that is workflow at its basic level. That's right.
Right.
Yeah, I think we have to say here that the workflow is getting a lot of attention in some of the newer products that are coming out. For example, SharePoint 2007 has some really pretty interesting customizable workflow that can be done as part of, you know, if you use SharePoint for document storage and document management, you can include it in that. Or if you just use it as an intranet, or collaboration on projects in the firm, you know, you can build workflow into that particular a product, and it's getting a lot of interesting following as a result. SharePoint 2007 is probably more interesting now than either of the its two predecessors.
So, but that really means, Brent, that you could use it for workflow, but the average bear can't.
No, I think the average bear can. I don't know if you've seen the interface in SharePoint 2007,
right.
But the workflow interface is made available to virtually anyone that signs onto the site. with the proper permissions, and can be customized. So,
of course, I've been running around telling accountants that with Microsoft Home Server and an outsourced Exchange, they could live a serverless and life in the future. Now you're telling them they're going to have a SharePoint server.
Well, you know, SPS Longhorn, if you want to refer to it as that, which is supposed to be out later this year, is going to have some SharePoint technologies built into it, and it's just exactly what the smaller firms are looking for.
Yeah, in fact, now that they've actually established the Server 2008 schedule, you know, and said that that's going to be included, you've got to remember that technology that is in SharePoint, which is, I think, properly called Windows Workflow Foundation, although they just refer to it as WAF, that's a pretty key strategic technology for Microsoft in general across much of their product lines.
It is.
And that SharePoint 2007 implementation is elegant enough. I agree with you on this one that I think a typical end user can use it now, whereas before you needed a typical technician to use it and to set it up. But I believe it's moved far enough along that we want to watch this one, because not only will it be in Microsoft products, it will wind up in other products. And I guess this workflow agenda that you sent us out for the call, Greg, must have, like, changed the karma, because on both Friday and today, that's exactly what I've been working on, some with Thompson's Go File Room, TaxFlow, basically defining procedures. In fact, I did it TaxFlow both today and on Friday
with
two different firms. And further was doing a review of CCH's workflow today. So it's made for an interesting, you know, thought process around this. But the earlier comment is dead on also, that they're today the workflow pieces are very disjoint. You're either taking a practice management workflow view, or you're taking a technology view like the SharePoint, or you're taking a, you know, independent bolt-on like the XCM approach, and, you know, I like the XCM product for what it's doing, or you're trying to do something that's part of your document management system, and I like some of those too. But a good generalized workflow for CPA firms still is a little tough to come by, because it isn't as integrated in as many places as we'd like. Even that said, though, the firms that are using workflow that I'm aware of are telling me that the workflow is improving their productivity, in some cases reducing the hours they're putting in on projects, or improving the billable hours in the projects, and that it's worth the money and time and trouble to set them up.
I agree.
Well, you know, one of the things that that occurred to me as you were talking about that, Randy, is that, you know, the both CCH and Thompson have clearly tasted the Microsoft Kool-Aid, because they are completely devoted to Outlook integration, both of them. They talk about deep integration. CCH is making lots of use of the smart client things. So, you know, maybe what we're going to see is the publishers who, you know, they kind of own the data within practice management and tax and DMS and all these places, and you kind of need the data to make workflow really work well, right?
Right.
Well, you need the data, and I think you have to also understand the work roles. That winds up being a much more of an issue than I would have perceived, but we have to know whether we can, when we should assign partners, seniors, managers, staff, and so forth.
So it's knowledge management.
Yeah, it really becomes a lot more, because it's like, okay, who worked with this client last year, and who is my most effective, least expensive person available? So notice it becomes a scheduling problem.
Right. And a training problem, because I want to make sure that while it's important to have some continuity on the engagement, it's also important to make sure that I expand people's horizons. So, you know, I got to do that.
So, you know, you've got all of these, I won't call them conflicting, but multiple priorities you're trying to handle at the same time. So from a setup, keeping it simple enough to use and effective, that's really a tough consideration for a developer, And I think this is another one of those like brand new evolving things, almost like 1040 work paper creation was a couple of 3 years ago. The workflows are still early in their generations, but it's been clear as we look at the workflow maturity in the last 1 or 2 years that they've come a long way.
So
before the other thing we probably ought to put on the radar screen is, you know, the Adobe product.
Absolutely. Yep,
good point. Good call.
Just so people have a frame of reference, it's a pretty interesting product. I'm referring to Lifecycle, which is a lot of firms are standardizing on PDF, and it's kind of a drag and drop workflow creation process, which has some interesting possibilities.
Yes, very much so, and in fact, there's quite good training. In fact, at the AIM Paperless Conference earlier this year, which would have been about the middle of April, I talked with a company who is representing Lifecycle and Adobe Connect, who actually had pretty good CPA firm background, and we discussed a little bit about how that was being implemented in their client base. Very fascinating stuff. Very good control of documents. A lot of the issues of releasing tax returns or forms or whatever is handled by the Lifecycle and Connect products. Very pretty.
You know, Greg, if we think about it, we're really in almost the fourth generation of this now, and I'd have to say probably some credit has to be given to Sarbanes-Oxley, because it put a lot of emphasis on the procedures and brought it to the attention of companies like Microsoft, and brought it out. I mean, if you stop to think, workflow began as everybody does it differently, so we have to find a way to be flexible enough to enable everyone's workflow. And that was back in the early 90s when we were doing tax software. Then the tax software had to get workflow down pretty well. And now it's beginning to expand. We saw it go into the suites so that, you know, people like CCH, like Sage, began to integrate it across their product lines. Really now we're beginning to see the fourth generation of really universal, sharp tools for major developers who can put a lot of clout behind it. And I think it's one of those categories that just watch over the next couple of years. It is going to revolutionize the industry.
And in fact, you're dead on top of that one, because you triggered a thought that I actually should make sure that our listeners are aware of, and that is that so much of our systems have been kind of discrete processing systems, but we actually didn't have the processes in there. So we had the accounting, but not the processes. And I've had demonstrations of products in the last 60 days where the processes are programmed right along with the accounting software. And when I saw it, I said, aha, finally processes and accounting are tied together independent. And I have not seen any other publisher doing it in this style right now. And that was a demonstration of the new SAP A1S product, which is not got a lot of exposure or traction here in the U.S., but they have spoken about it internationally and a tiny bit here.
Right.
In fact, that's one of the things we'll probably get to see at Tech if they get the permissions to discuss.
Sure, sure. Well, let's get out of the workflow thing with one kind of wrap-up question. As we talk about where we're at right now, for the average small to medium-sized firm, I mean, all of this is fine. We're going to have workflow and all that, but we still have due date monitoring and task management and scheduling. We still gotta do this. What's a firm to do? Do they just sit kind of where they're at and wait for this to evolve for a year or so? And let somebody else kind of carve it out, or should they go out and get one of these standalone things and start trying, or do they set it up in their DMS? What do you think, Brett? What's your answer?
I was just going to say, as Randy said, you know, the firms that have adopted even minimal basic workflow are seeing the benefits of that. And in my opinion, why not? You've got the tools built in. Start implementing what you have, and then you adjust as better tools become available.
Right. So even though it's not perfect, it doesn't answer all of your problems, you can still solve 75% of them. Why wouldn't you do that?
and see some benefit from that.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's right, because, you know, a lot of the folks have document management, have workflow, use it. If you have to buy something independent, look at a SurePrep, look at an XCM. Those will solve the problem in the short term. And I think the small firms eventually will truly get some best practice procedures that are available in templates and workflow, because I've seen some of the prototypes on this. And 2 years from now, perhaps, they'll actually be able to get a little more off the shelf. But in the short term, the investment's worth it, I think. So I would go look at do a webinar with an XCM or do a webinar with your document management vendor and understand what your workflow you already own can do.
Right. Okay. Well, guys, we had a couple of things that came in from readers and from listeners, I guess, and I want to address them. One person asked us to talk a little bit about 16.9 monitors as opposed to the old 4.3. I guess they're not dots; those are colons, right? But we got a new aspect here, and I'm sitting here with my laptop, which is 16:9. And my TV is 16:9, but other monitors aren't. What are people doing? What are problems? What are opportunities? What are your thoughts, Dave? You're a hardware guy. What do you think?
Well, I'm not seeing any problem at all converting over to 16:9. In fact, I see a lot of benefits, just from the fact that you get more screen space in terms of the width of the screen. I mean, you used to have to pay, if you remember a decade or three ago, you used to have to pay enormous fortunes to get that capability. Now it's built in, and especially with tiltable screens. The other big news here is that these monitors have become so inexpensive. Why wouldn't you want to do it, and why not get the biggest one that you can reasonably afford? So I'm a big fan of the 16:9. It gives you a lot more flexibility with your monitor. It gives you the ability to view things other than the Vista standard Microsoft homepage. So I'm big on it.
Okay. Brent, any thoughts?
Well, yeah. You know, the real advantage to bigger monitors is the baby boomers who are getting older and can't see quite as well as they used to.
Now, why would you mention that with me on the line?
I think that was aimed at me.
The other thing, of course, is, you know, a lot of the, if you look at the applications that are coming out now, Outlook is a perfect example. The new interfaces are laid out to take advantage of a monitor that's wider than it is tall. And so it makes some sense. It's not just because you want to watch, you know, videos or movies or whatever on your LCD screen. It actually has some business applications.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, your Outlook perspective there is quite right, because that's actually the way I look at the Outlook on a 24-inch 16:9 monitor on my home office. And I would take it a little bit further down the right way. If you can get HP or Dell monitors that are 22-inch 16:9s, you can effectively get two images side-by-side that are 8.5 by 11, actually just a tiny bit bigger. So in effect, by having a single 16:9, you actually can see two images at once. It's almost like two monitors for the price of one. And the price point last week on these was about $220 versus a 24 running about $279, I think it was. I couldn't see the extra money for the extra 2 inches, although it's notably bigger. But, you know, a firm being able to get monitors, 22 inches from 179 to 220 or so,
right?
I just can't imagine not replacing a good number of monitors and using the 16:9 format. Remember also, though, I'm a pretty big fan of rotating monitors.
Me too.
Because I like to have documents in portrait mode, and I can tell you that using my big old 24-inch vertical, because I also have two of those, one horizontal and one vertical, my wife has even walked in behind me, watched me work, and said, you know, I thought you were buying that monitor just because it was, like, bigger and it was new. But she said, watching you work, you're clearly working a lot faster than you were when you were on your 21s.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, and it kind of takes me back to, you know, why we let the first guy build the first monitor and make it landscape rather than portrait in the first place, when we live in a world where everything that, that we look at on the printed page is portrait, and then somehow we ended up with this landscape thing, and now we're having to go back and solve it. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I was actually placing portrait monitors in 1983 in desktop publishing shops, but boy, were they dear.
Right.
So, and the other one that doesn't make sense is just the whole movie industry has always been 16 by 9, but there were some mechanical, hardware, technical reasons early. We went with 4 by 3.
Sure.
And I remember those, but it's probably beyond the scope of our chatting.
Okay. Well, we've got one more reader question that I want to deal with. I want to remind all of our listeners, if you have a comment for the Tech to Go gang, for any of us, a comment or a question or anything that you'd like to give us a call, the number is 800-456-0864, extension 2106, and just call and leave your voicemail there, and we'll think about trying to answer them in a future episode. And if you promise not to say bad words, we might even put you on the air with the rest of us. So I did get a note the other day that I wanted to make sure I answered here, and we answer this all the time, but it's obviously a very interesting one for a lot of accountants. And my note said, "Greg, I listened to one of your podcasts, and a Microsoft program for CPAs was mentioned. It involved paying an annual fee for 10 licenses. Could you provide the name of the program and the website? Thanks for your help." Well, we'll print that, and we'll also put it in the show notes. But, Brent, you certainly live in that MPAN world, and you know about the Action Pack. Give us a real quick rundown before we bail out here.
Well, MPAN is a program that was developed by Microsoft for professional accountants, and you don't have to pay a fee, but obviously if you want the software, which is what this particular listener is referring to, then you would want to pay the annual fee and get what's called the Action Pack, which is a tremendous amount of software licensing for a really minimal price.
Right, and we'll put those links up in the show notes. And again, everybody, understand, as you're listening to Tech2Go, no need to stop and scribble down websites. We'll put them all in the show notes, and you simply go to CPA Technology Advisor, CPATech.com or CPATA.com, and there's all the show notes. And again, if you have questions or comments or thoughts, 800-456-0864, extension 2106. This is episode 5, June 2007, Tech to Go. Randy, thanks so much for being here. We sure appreciate your time.
Very pleased to come along.
Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Always fun to have you.
Always a pleasure.
And Brent, again, thank you. We will try next month to record live at the AICPA Tech Plus conference in Las Vegas. Most of us will be there, and so we're working on trying to do that live. If we do that, and you happen to be at Tech and would like to join us, simply collar one of us and let us know, and we'll see if we can tell you exactly when and where that'll be. And so until our next episode, guys, thanks all of you for your help, and as some of our other podcast competitors would say, that's another episode in the can. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech to Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust.
Tech to Go has been brought to you by the CPA Technology Advisor. Visit cpatechadvisor.com for more great podcast programs from the intersection of technology and public accounting.